As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yo, yo, welcome to a post-game edition of the Forum Club. I'm your co-host, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic, Jovan Buha. And tonight, the Lakers dropped another one at home, their third of the season already. 118-109 to the San Antonio Spurs, the third time the teams have faced each other in the past five games. And I think that's the first angle I want to take with this one. It is a bit bizarre that the Lakers have now lost three home games. They're 2-3 at home, 4-0 on the road after their 4-0 road trip. But Frank Vogel said something interesting before the game that, I think kind of bore out during this matchup that, it's hard to play a team so many times in such a short span. And he almost compared it to like a playoff series where if you win one playoff game, let alone two, the team that loses has the psychological edge because of their desperation and because of just the competitiveness of the NBA. And I felt like that was an element of tonight's matchup where, the Lakers had won twice in San Antonio. The Spurs played better in that second matchup and clearly made some adjustments. I talked about this, I think, a couple podcasts ago, but I had asked Frank Vogel about that second San Antonio matchup and what the Lakers did differently. And he'd said it was actually more of what the Spurs did differently in that kind of spreading the Lakers out, trying to keep the ball out of the paint and just playing five out and really trying to spread them thin with the rotations. And I think you saw that tonight with LaMarcus Aldridge back in the lineup for them. He had a team-high 28 points, actually a game-high 28 points, 11 of 18 shooting, three threes. And the Lakers really didn't have an answer for LaMarcus Aldridge. I do think another element of this, and this is the one that I think most of Lakers Twitter is talking about, and even the team was talking about a little bit, and certain guys kind of acknowledged it more than others, but the team has kind of been coasting a little bit to start the season. They have not been giving their best effort. Now, they've had KCP and Alex Caruso out. Caruso made his, return tonight after missing the last five games, and post game, he ended up saying, he was asked by Bill Orem, why he ended up being in the NBA's health and safety protocol. And he clarified it, as many had suspected, he did not test positive for COVID-19. He was actually a close contact, with contact tracing, with someone that he had seen after Christmas. So the reason he ended up missing five games was not because he had COVID. It was just someone he knew and had seen right after Christmas had it. And as a precaution, the Lakers kept him out that long. But missing KCP and Alex Caruso, I think that really took out some of the energy. Again, as I talked about last podcast, like those two guys get out in transition. They're two of the best perimeter defenders on the team, if not the two best, if we're not necessarily considering Anthony Davis or like peak LeBron. In that conversation, like on a night in, night out basis, I think those are the two most consistent perimeter defenders on this team. And, missing those two guys definitely made an impact. I think it, you know, affected them defensively. It affected them just energy and effort wise. But you know, so you saw Alex, and he said after the game that he still wasn't feeling great. He's not close to 100%. Being off for over a week, you know, kind of affected his conditioning. So he thinks he has room to improve. And I kind of saw that, but I did think he made a difference. And you know, he came in, he hit a couple threes. I felt just the pace and the tempo with that second group of, you know, Trez, Markieff, LeBron, Alex and Wes, like that group to me is a group that makes things happen. If you remember in opening night, that was the group that cut the Clippers 20-point lead down. So that is a group that's been effective. You know, it's a formula the Lakers used last year. You know, that was the group with Dwight, and, you know, not Wes, but, you know, KCP actually in Wes's spot. So that's a group that, I think the, you know, Lakers have been successful with and haven't necessarily been able to use that much because Alex has been out and, you know, sometimes KCP will run with them too. So I think, you know, that component of, still missing KCP, who's nursing the left ankle sprain, having Alex back, but him not being 100%, like that was a factor in this. But the Lakers have also not been giving their best effort. And Anthony Davis went in on the defense, you know, after the game, just saying, you know, we played like shit defensively and we did not look good. And he was like, it's honestly hard to even evaluate our defense because we weren't executing and we weren't in our schemes. And like, we were blowing like basic coverages. So I do think, you know, AD was clearly frustrated. He you know, admitted that after the third quarter, he ended up, you know, kind of hitting the table and flipping over a water cooler or something like that. And like, he was very frustrated. And it was clear in the post game, like, you know, AD is not the most animated guy, but he was, you know, visibly upset with the defense. And you know, you've seen an increased effort from him. You know, tonight he had a steal, three blocks. It's been now, you know, multiple games in a row where he's had multiple blocks. But even, you know, he himself called himself out. And I think, you know, this is honestly a early wake up call for the Lakers. You know, because even though they went 4-0 on the road trip, they didn't necessarily play great. That easily could have been a 2-2 or 3-1 road trip. And while, you know, 3-1 road trip is still successful, you know, 2-2, you probably look at it a little bit differently. And, you know, we could be talking about potentially a 4-5 or 5-4 start. So I think losing a game like this, especially losing at home, losing in the fashion that they did, like they didn't play that poorly, especially offensive. I mean, they shot 50%, you know, they had 66 points in the paint, which I believe was a season high. But then you look at 8 fast break points, and that was the first time this season that they didn't crack double figures as one of the, you know, the best transition teams in the NBA. So it was a really weird game. They had their moments. They had a couple second half runs, you know, one time tying it at 89-89, a second time they had a chance to cut it to from 8-5, where Wes Matthews missed that open three in the left corner. And I think that moment was kind of the game. I think it was 108-100. Had Wes hit that, it would have been 108-103. So overall, you know, part of me is just like, this is a weird game. Third time playing this team in 5 games, third time in a week. You know, the Spurs were coming off beating the Clippers and having a nice showing in that game. And the Spurs are a well-coached team, right? Like Greg Popovich is arguably the best coach of all time. So, I think some of these things are starting to be a little concerning. Now, you know, we don't know how much of this is because of the short off season. You know, is there some type of bubble hangover? Because the Lakers aren't the only team that has seen some weird results to start the season. If you look across the league, some of the teams that have played deeper, you know, second round, third round in the playoffs have had a weird start to the season. So I don't think they're necessarily unique in that. And with that said, they're still 6-3, you know, tied for second best record in the West. So it's not like they're underachieving by any means, but I think anyone watching these games, you know, is in agreement. I'm seeing it with the post game questions, and I think this is a good transition. You know, it's been multiple times where I'll say, you know, what are your post game questions? And I keep getting, what's up with the effort? What's up with the slow starts? You know, why isn't this team trying? And I do think, you know, even going back to, you know, I've seen this, this example kind of being thrown around Lakers Twitter right now, like looking at that 2000-2001 Kobe Shaq Lakers team, like that team barely got to 56-26. You know, they were not the number one seed, and they go into the playoffs and end up going 15-1 and just steamrolling everybody. And I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen in, you know, this postseason. We'll see if there even is a postseason with some of the news today with the COVID outbreak across the league. But I do think that, you know, coming off of a championship, having such a short offseason, it's hard to kind of get back into that groove. And then also having a bunch of new pieces, you're trying to mentally get back to where you were, but you're also implementing all these new guys who are still learning the system. As I've said multiple times now, like, these are high usage pieces in Dennis and Trez and Mark, you know, on the offensive side. And then in the form of you know, Trez and Mark, you know, two totally different defenders in comparison to JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard. So you're also tweaking your defensive system where it's not necessarily like funnel them to the big athletic 7-footers in the middle of the paint who are going to clean everything up and just kind of impose their will physically and athletically. Like, it's a different system. And you've seen some of the growing pains, I think, in the early going. But again, I mean, this team's 6-3. I'm not too worried, but I do think that this could potentially be the type of wake-up call that they needed, where, you know, the first two losses, Clippers, Blazers, you know, two good teams, two teams projected to be, you know, top five, top six seeds in the West. Like, those are, I think, not necessarily like bad losses. You know, I think there were moments in both games where you know, you weren't necessarily happy with the Lakers play, but, you know, losing to Portland or the Clippers, I think that's fine. Losing the Spurs, it's a different level. You know, this is a team that I don't expect to make the playoffs. So you are probably losing to a lottery team, in which case, you know, and at home at that, that's a little bit more concerning. But again, I think this is going to be something that Frank Vogel can dig into the film, dig into all the defensive mistakes they had. You know, the rotations felt like they were always a step late, and the Spurs were just getting so many open threes, and they shot 16-35 from deep, 45.7%. So I think this is going to be a learning lesson for the Lakers, something they can kind of point to as like potentially, I think, a turning point in this early part of the season. And if it's not, then it's not. And they're going to keep dropping games that they shouldn't drop. And, you know, maybe it affects their seeding and they end up being the 3 seed or the 4 seed or something. But I'm not at that point yet. But I will say the light is going, it's going from green to maybe like a greenish yellow. I don't like a lime color. It is yellowing a little bit. I'm not in the yellow yet, but it's something to monitor over the next 5 to 10 games.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So let's get into the open forum Q&A portion of the show. So let's see. Jared Johnson, friend of the show, at J_the_truth. Why isn't Harrell blocking any shots this year? So let me pull it up, what Montrezl Harrell is averaging from a shot blocking perspective. So this year, 0.3 blocks heading into tonight's game, and he had 0 blocks tonight. So it's going to drop maybe to 0.2. That's a good question. I do think that he has been paired, I guess, primarily with Markieff, but he does sometimes play with AD. And I think when he's with AD, obviously AD is going to, you know, be the primary rim protector. That said, AD is often guarded, you know, fours and threes when he's next to Trez, and Trez is the guy who is, you know, guarding, like as we saw in the Portland game, he's guarding Nurkic. I do think part of it is that teams have been trying to target Trez in the pick and roll, and it is harder to get blocks when you're involved in the action, especially for a guy like Trez. Like Trez's strength as a shot blocker is he's a helping like weak side coming out of nowhere and blocks the shot out of bounds type guy. He's not necessarily the I'm going to body you in the post and block your shot, or like I'm going to check this guy, you know, on the perimeter or in isolation and block the shot. I think in those instances, you actually see like if he's switched onto a guard, either the guard will settle for a jumper, or if he takes it at Trez, he'll usually get by him and get to the rim. And then maybe, you know, a help guy comes and he'll kick it, or he'll shoot it and maybe that guy contests it or whatever. But like Trez isn't necessarily going to stop the ball and then like block a shot. So I think with him, there's still a lot of room to grow defensively. You know, I've said offensively, I think he has resembled the sixth man of the year version of himself more than he did in the bubble with the Clippers. But he hasn't necessarily gotten back to, I think, his best version of himself defensively. There have been some encouraging things. I think his ability to play out on the perimeter, to rotate, like some of those things are good. But then I also think his ability to be picked on in the pick and roll and to not, you know, offer that level of rim protection that a Dwight or a JaVale did, like that has hurt the Lakers defensively. So there's a little bit of a give and take. You know, overall, I would probably rate his defense as below average right now. But it is something that I think he has room for improvement. You know, as someone who watched him for the last 3 years, like I do think he's not been his best self defensively yet. So part of that's, you know, scheme and getting comfortable in it. I think part of it is also Frank Vogel, you know, tweaking the scheme to figure out what is the best way to use Trez. I do think that ultimately, you know, if the Lakers were in a situation where they were playing Portland again, you'd want Anthony Davis defending Yusuf Nurkic down the stretch if Trez is out there. And you'd probably want Trez on Robert Covington or, you know, someone who you're not as afraid of coming, you know, attacking you off the dribble. And I thought that was an interesting, you know, kind of dynamic on the stretch where AD was kind of just parked in the corner guarding Robert Covington, who is basically out of the action entirely. And then, you know, Trez was the one involved in trying to both, you know, show and step up against Dame Lillard, but then also recover in the short role against Nurkic. So that's something to watch. I do think, you know, it seems like I'm getting at least one, if not multiple Trez questions every post game. I know some fans are frustrated with him. Some fans are optimistic with him. I'm probably somewhere in the middle in that, but I do think that it's going to be, you know, he has a in my opinion, a huge role adjustment with the Lakers versus the Clippers. You know, I think with the Clippers, he was the third leading scorer and was, you know, pretty consistently that third or fourth guy. He has not been that with the Lakers yet. And, you know, I think you've seen Dennis take on that role at times, Kyle take on that role. You know, THT had a nice night tonight off the bench. So like the Lakers, I think, have a more equal offense behind AD and LeBron. Whereas with the Clippers, it was more, okay, it's Lou and Trez. It's the Lou and Trez show with the second unit. And the Lakers haven't, you know, figured that out yet. So defensively, I think he'll get better. Aniket Mohan, Aniket underscore Mohan 24. So he's asked a few questions now. So shout out to you. Why aren't we faring well against average to good playoff teams like the Spurs, Blazers, and the Clippers, and all the losses being at home? So I kind of addressed this earlier in the podcast, but I think the Clippers matchup really to me was just, you know, it was very kind of shades of opening night last year. But it really, to me, like the Lakers' inexperience with each other, and the Clippers have some of that too. I mean, they also have some new pieces in their supporting cast, and it's not like they're returning entirely the same team. But I do think they had more continuity, and some of those pieces, you know, looking at guys like Serge Ibaka, Nick Batum, Luke Kennard, they're a little bit lower usage than, again, the types of guys that the Lakers are trying to implement, a Dennis, a Trez, a Mark. Like, those guys are more involved in the offense and more involved in, you know, actions and needing stuff run for them or needing the ball to be more effective, where, you know, Serge Ibaka is stretch big, pick and pop guy. Nick Batum has helped run the offense, but he's also just more of a facilitator and playmaker and not necessarily a guy who's going to be like looking for his own shot that much. And Luke Kennard is kind of somewhere in the middle of those two. So I think it was a more seamless fit for the Clippers offensively than it has been for the Lakers. And, you know, yeah, I think aside from that hot start from the Clippers, like that game was pretty close the rest of the way. You know, Paul George kind of put it away at the end of the third, early fourth. But I think that, you know, was a little bit deceptive with the, you know, the Clippers hot shooting to start that game. If they kind of shoot, you know, more towards the norm, that to me is a game that probably goes down to the wire. LeBron's probably in, you know, over the last 8 minutes or so. And I think, you know, who knows, maybe the Lakers win that game. But the Blazers game, that one to me was more, you know, as we've discussed, like, that was a lot of defensive mistakes. You know, the Lakers just couldn't capitalize offensively, but then also defensively with that closing group, you know, they were picking on Trez. There was multiple mistakes he made, multiple mistakes the Lakers made defensively. So that was to me more of like a growing experience of like, here's our first crunch time against a good team. You know, Frank was experimenting with the closing lineup. He was experimenting with Trez against Dame, against Nurkic, and that ended up not working out. Now, the Spurs one, I think this one was, you know, circumstantial, where it was, you know, first game back from road trip, third time playing them in five games, and just, you know, kind of some of the bad habits that the Lakers have been building, frankly, you know, with the lack of effort, lack of intensity. So I think, again, it's so early in the season. They're only nine games in. I think it's too early to panic. Again, this team is tied for second in the West. So I think that is, you know, way too premature for that. And final question, Ahima Osazua, at Ahima on Twitter. What's the best NBA game you've covered live? So for me, it's a tie between two games. So I'll give you both. One would be Kobe's last game, the 60-point game against the Jazz. I was there for that, and I've never heard Staples Center, you know, that loud. And you know, I wasn't there during the Kobe Shaq years, so I'm sure, you know, Game 7 against Portland or some of those Finals games, maybe some of those matchups against the Kings or the Spurs, like. I'm sure there were times where Kobe scoring 81, like I'm sure there's been times, you know, close to that level, but you know, once he got into the 40s and you could sense like, okay, he's going for it. He's trying to get 50 and they have a chance to win this game. Like it was basically that whole fourth quarter, you know, Staples was just standing the entire time and you know, just had a deafening pitch. And you know, it was also cool because there were so many celebrities there. You know, so many people wanting to see Kobe's final game, that, you know, that to me is an experience and a game and a moment I just will never forget. The second one would be Clippers Spurs game 7, in 2015. At the time, and I still think it's held up, you know, many people consider that the best first round series ever. And I think it's in that conversation still. But that was the game that Chris Paul hits the game-winning shot over Tim Duncan and Danny Green, and that was just such a high-level first-round series. Like it felt like a second-round matchup or a conference finals matchup, and you know that was just because of the weird division and seeding stuff. And you were like, okay, you know, these two teams are too good to be playing each other in the first round, but that's how it happened. And, you know, that to me was probably the best Clippers team of that era, that ended up, you know, never making a conference final. So I think that matchup, that series overall was probably the best series I ever covered. But, you know, that game seven, Chris Paul hitting that shot, that to me was, you know, one of the best games I've ever seen. But those are the two that stand out, you know, when I think about the best game I've ever covered. And you know, those to me are two of the best and the most interesting games of the last 5 years. So, you know, I'm definitely, you know, very fortunate to have been at those two. But that will do it for tonight's episode. Thank you guys for listening. I'll be back tomorrow night after the Lakers play the Bulls. If they lose to the Bulls, I'll have a different tone on the panic meter, but I'm optimistic that they won't. So I will talk to you guys after that game.